Blog Talk Radio.
Under the gun.
Son of a biscuit. Can you hear me?
Are you driving? Yeah, well, I can hear you now.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I literally just walked out the door at work.
Okay. Yeah. You were breaking up a little bit there at first, so I was a little concerned, but now I can hear you fine now.
Yeah, I just pulled out of the work parking lot.
I got you. Well, I'm glad you can make it.
Me too.
Tonight. Yeah, we've got a pretty pretty cool show tonight. We have two amateur filmmakers coming on the show to talk about their documentary called Paranormal Diaries. You know, and you know, I watch these ghost shows, or I guess these YouTube shows on like when I'm bored, I watch like paranormal documentaries on YouTube,
yeah.
You know, and they usually look like shit. To be honest with you, most of them I've seen are like, you know, very amateur. When they say amateur, it's like emphasis on the amateur part of it. Which, you know, I realize not a lot of people have the right equipment to do that kind of stuff, and it's a passion project people have. But I watched a preview of Paranormal Diaries on YouTube. I don't even know if it's even out yet, to be honest with you. But so it's a preview of it, and it looks really good. I mean, it looks like television quality type of stuff. So I'm definitely interested in talking to them. But before we put them on, I want to give a quick thank you to everyone who came out to the Cabin on 360. We had an event out there this past weekend to raise money for a young girl named Sawyer Perkins who has brain cancer. It's not a good outlook for her. You know, 7 years old, she should be out playing with her friends, and instead she's, you know, constantly in and out of hospitals getting tests done and radiation and all that other stuff a seven-year-old should not be going through. So we had a nice investigation to try to raise money for her and her family this past weekend. A lot of people showed up, and we managed to raise over $500 for her. So,
that's awesome.
Again, yeah, and I was very happy with the turnout. We had a great food, you know, a lot of new friends were made out at the cabin, and, you know, and fortunately for us, the spirits were active as well. You know, a lot of people got some EVPs, a lot of people who have never heard an EVP before came out convinced that the cabin is haunted. So, again, I'm going to give a quick thank you to everyone who showed up to the event. And I think our guests are online here, so I'm going to welcome them.
Welcome to the craziness.
What is
hey,
up,
what's
guys?
Going on,
how
guys?
Doing?
How you doing?
Oh, man, we're doing,
how
great. Awesome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We're definitely happy to be on tonight.
Oh man, I was telling Celeste earlier. I watched the preview of your movie, and I told her it's very well done. I'm very impressed by the quality of the film. What made you decide to make this documentary?
Well, I think it was kind of a combination of a couple things. I think, you know, you look at where Austin and I kind of come from is we grew up in a house that was very much a haunted house. We experienced a lot of things growing up as kids. So there was always that interest in the paranormal that was there for us. And that's something that I know lived with me especially. I was always very, very much into the paranormal. And, you know, Austin can tell you, too, that he was as well. But we also were very much into filmmaking, and we were the kids who were kind of running around with our parents, you know, camcorder and making, you know, stop motion films and some kind of claymation kind of stuff and making all these sort of homemade movies. And it just got to a point where I had this idea probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. And I wanted to make this film a reality, and we did it. I mean, we saved up. This is 100% self-funded by the both of us. And we just saved up, and finally last summer, that's when we started filming. We hit the road last summer, and we literally spent 2 months on the road investigating just Austin and I, and it was literally the trip of a lifetime.
What are some of the experiences you had growing up as a child?
Well, I think it was kind of, I'll call it, your typical haunted house kind of things. You would have, you'd hear some noises, you'd hear some voices. One thing that was very prevalent and common was we would often smell old tobacco smell, like a smoke smell. Mm-hmm. And not like a cigarette, like somebody standing outside of a bar, but this is like the kind of cigarette that your grandpa would have smoked.
Like a sweet smell to it.
I mean, it was not like somebody just lit up a Marlboro cigarette in the house. Now, one mm-hmm. thing to know is that our parents were not smokers. And the other thing to know is that my parents, the house that we grew up in, was in the middle of nowhere. There were no neighbors. There was no way that smell could be somehow filtering into the house. A couple mm-hmm. of strange things that happened. I know on one instance, my dad had a ball roll across the floor and stop directly at his feet. That was pretty creepy. I think that really, that freaked him out, because though he believes in it, I don't think he wanted to believe that the house was haunted.
Mm-hmm. Well, nobody wants to believe their house is haunted, because then they have to live in a haunted house.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it was kind of those sort of things. I, at one point, mm-hmm. Was probably 9 or 10 years old. I was going to go downstairs and play in the basement or do whatever I was going to do. And I opened up the basement door, and just as I did that, I saw a figure standing at the bottom of the basement stairs. I hate to use the word shadow figure because it's become so popular, but that's what it was. It was a dark figure that immediately darted as I opened up the door, as I was beginning to walk down. So those were some of the things that were happening to us.
Oh, wow. Well, guys, if you're just joining us, we're here with Blaine and Austin Duncan, and we're talking about their movie, Paranormal Diaries. So you're growing up. Go ahead.
Was there a defining moment for either of you guys, obviously growing up in a house that has activity that was piqued your interest? But was there a defining moment that you guys could point to, like one moment in particular that caused you guys to either one, start researching the paranormal as investigators, or two, want to do this movie?
That's a good question. Austin, you want to answer that one?
I think for me, one of like the moments that I always go back to was when I was really little, I used to play video games in Blaine's room, and I would go up in his room and I'd play video games. And I remember none of the bedrooms have locks or anything. And I went up in the bedroom, and I remember when I was done playing video games, I went to open the door, and I couldn't. It was like it was locked. Couldn't jiggle the handle at all. And I remember feeling like very tripped out and heard voices. Actually, so that was like for me as a kid, like, oh my God, it's real type of thing.
And I think for me, I think it was one of those things where growing up, I don't ever remember a time that I was not into the paranormal, that I was not into, horror movies or reading scary stories to tell in the dark, those kind of things. And I always tell people that I was the kind of kid who I laid in bed at night with the sheets over my head with the blanket and I read ghost stories. And that's how I've been my entire life. So I don't know that there was never a time when I didn't believe in it. So I don't think there was like a defining moment that I knew I wanted to research it, because that was always there. That was always present, that I wanted to learn more about it. But I think probably having some of the paranormal experiences that we had, that obviously led to the path that we're on now.
Did your friends experience stuff with you in your house?
I don't remember having any. Well, I didn't, but I know, Austin, you've had actually within the last, 5 years, you've had some
yeah.
things happen to you and your friends?
Yeah, so it wasn't actually that late. Yeah, it was probably 3 years ago. My buddy was – it was, we were all going to bed and I had a few guys stay over for the night, and he was going to plug his phone charger in, and he claims to this day, he actually just brought it up to me this past weekend, that he felt a hand grab his hand while he went to plug it in. So that still sticks with him today, and he always tells people when they're going to my house, like, oh, that house is haunted.
Now, how old was your house, or I guess is your house that you grew up in?
Yeah, the house is actually not that old, which is kind of the weird part about it. The house was built in 1992, but the interesting part is that it is surrounded by Native American street names. Now, I'm not going to tell you that this house was built on an Indian burial ground. I'm not going to say that, and I have no inclination that it was. But what I could tell you is that there's a lot of Native American names that are present in the area, the street that the house is on, or the road that the house is on. The other thing that's interesting is that our neighbor had actually researched the property. And now when I say neighbor, I mean somebody who lives a half a mile away. This is not, you know, a true neighbor. Like, they live in a neighborhood. This is, this is a half a mile away. And she actually discovered, and I have no way to validate this, but this is what she passed along to my parents, was that there was a well somewhere on the property. It's a huge wooded area, that there is a well on the property. And supposedly, back in the day, there were Native American Indians that were killed and thrown down this well. Now, I can tell you that I have, over the years when I still lived at home, I have scoured those woods in an attempt to find that well, and I never have. There are some old buildings that are dilapidated and they don't stand anymore, but I've never found that well.
Well, it's a good story, anyways, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and again, I can't verify that it's true or not, and that's why I tell people that when I tell that story. But you know, it's interesting to think that could potentially play into what's happening there.
Well, I guess I should ask you guys, where are you from?
We're from it's a small farming community that's about 30 to 40 miles west of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a real small town. It's only about 500-600 people. You know, just there's a church and a couple bars and you know, a Catholic school, and that's about it.
What are some of the, like, main haunted places in Minnesota?
I would say probably my favorite, or one of my favorite haunted locations, is actually the Palmer House. And it's a hotel, Palmer House Hotel. It was built in 1901. And it's been featured on a few of the television shows that are out there. And we actually, when Austin and I set out kind of on this journey on our trip, and we said, you know, we're going to drive the back roads of America. We're going to find whatever haunted locations that we can come across. And it doesn't matter how long it takes us. We have no real destination. We're just going to drive. But I knew with that there were going to be some places that I wanted to hit. And one of those places was the Palmer House Hotel. It's about 120 miles north of where we live. And it's just, if you've ever, you know, for anybody who's a paranormal investigator like you guys, you kind of can feel that you're drawn to a location. And I don't want to speak for Austin, but I can definitely say for myself that the Palmer House Hotel is one of those places. I've had a few paranormal experiences there before we went and filmed there. And then some of the things that happened to us while we were there, again, only justified the reasons why I wanted to film there so bad. So the Palmer House is really one of my favorite locations. And Austin would probably agree with that, because that was the first
Absolutely.
Stop on our trip. That was the first leg of our journey. And, you know, that was really kind of what kicked everything off.
Wow.
Now, are you guys still traveling?
We are not, no. So we finished filming. We wrapped filming last summer. We were done in August. I don't remember the exact date, but we were done in August. And we came back and we sort of compiled what we had and started editing and got into that post-production stage. What I'll tell you is that we actually had an opportunity at the end of May of 2017 to go back out sort of for one final trip. There was one location that I really wanted to go to, and for one reason or another, timing, whatever you want to call it, the planets didn't align for us. We weren't able to go there, but we had the opportunity to go in May. So we hit the road for one last trip. We went down there, we investigated, and it was an amazing, amazing experience, terrifying experience. But we're done filming at this point.
So there are no plans for Paranormal Diaries 2?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because Austin and I were just editing last Friday, and we were sort of talking about that. We have about 270 hours worth of footage. Okay, and now that's not 270 hours of straight paranormal investigating, because we literally filmed everything for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would stop at hotels and we would film, and we would, you know, interview people along the way, or we would stop at a small town and, you know, talk to the locals and ask them about paranormal or haunted locations in the area. So there's a lot of that, but I would say more than half is actual paranormal investigating. It's ghost hunting. So we have enough. We could probably make four films if we wanted to. But right now we're just focused on getting this edited down. And it's been difficult because we have so much footage that it's hard to cut that much. When you're trying to make, you know, a feature-length, hour-and-a-half-long documentary, it's hard to take 270 hours and cram it into an hour and a half. So I'm not going to say that you know, the Paranormal Diaries 2 isn't an option, because I think everything's on the table at this point. But right now we're just focusing on this main film and getting it out.
Currently, I know a lot of places around here that you guys could come visit.
Yeah, where are you guys from?
Virginia. I'm from Virginia. She's from Florida. So you can make
a normal,
you know.
Is
exactly
Major Graham Mansion, is that out there?
That's in Virginia.
That's in Virginia? Have you guys been there?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
I've never been out there. Yeah.
All right, that's like on my top 10 places to go is Major Graham Mansion. Don't ask me why. Either
Virginia or,
you know,
West Virginia. I'm not positive. I think it's in Virginia, but don't quote me on that. I have to look that up.
All right. When we were out filming, we really concentrated on the Midwest, and it was sort of one of those things that, because we didn't have really an end destination, you know, we didn't know exactly where it was that we wanted to finish filming. We just knew we wanted to stop at all these little towns along the way and find out if they had, you know, any haunted hot spots in the area. So we didn't get too far away from home. We traveled, I want to say it was like 7 states total. So we didn't get too far away from Minneapolis from our home, because there were a couple times that we came back just to kind of, you know, keep our sanity, so to speak. We needed to just take a break and sort of cleanse ourselves and get away from it for a couple days before we headed back out. So we wanted to get to the East Coast. I would love to get to the East Coast, the South. There's so many places down there that I'd love to get to, too. So who knows, man? We might do it someday.
That'd be great.
That's awesome. Now, for you guys, and you both can answer, do you guys specifically have anyone in the field that kind of inspires your research, either your techniques or something like that?
I'll go first, and I don't know that I necessarily have anybody that inspires me, and I think for both Austin and I, we have a somewhat of a different investigative techniques that we use, different investigative techniques. So I don't know that there's necessarily, you know, anybody that inspires me. I think I can look back at, you know, a number of different names that you throw out there and kind of see the path that they led for where we are today. You know, Hans Holzer, for example. We had the privilege of interviewing Hans Holzer for the last time about the Amityville case before he passed away about 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it was. You know, and you can say what you want about Hans Holzer and whether you believe what he had to say or not, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their own opinions. But, you know, somebody like that who started way back in the 40s, you know, I throw the Warrens out there. And not that they're any kind of inspiration to me, but they're the kind of people that really paved the path for where we're at today. So in a way, they've sort of inspired the paranormal and paranormal investigating as we know it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with him there. For me, like growing up, Blaine is a few years older than me. So when he would be watching paranormal documentaries, for a lot of the time, it would be like Ed and Lorraine Warren. And I remember thinking like back then, like how crazy of a job and opportunity that is for them. And so I guess for me, that would be my answer as well. Yeah.
It reminds me a lot, you know, this guy, he's a polarizing figure. It reminds me a lot of Zach Bagans, because his whole thing started off with a documentary. Ghost Adventures was a documentary. Him, Nick, and Aaron went out to document the paranormal, kind of like what you guys are doing. But, you know, they didn't have YouTube back then. With all the paranormal documentaries that are out there on YouTube, all these different teams putting their evidence out there, what do you think makes your documentary stand out from everyone else?
It's a great question. I think there's a couple different things that play into our documentary and make it different than anything else that's out there right now. Number one, you know, we are doing something, or we did something that not too many people are able to do, and that's literally pack up our camera equipment, hit the road, and go and investigate almost for 2 months straight. So that idea in itself is really something that's new, and not many people have been able to have the opportunity that we have had to do that. The other thing that is sort of interesting about what we do, and sometimes people kind of scratch their head and they go, I don't really understand that. But when Austin and I go out and investigate, we go out with an EVP recorder and a camera. And not saying that we don't have more than one camera or more than one EVP recorder, but if we can't capture the audio or we can't capture something on video, it's not good enough for me. And especially it's not good enough for my film. And I don't mean to say it's not good enough, like I don't believe it. But if I'm going to spend, you know, 2 months straight on the road, I can't take something like, you know, the Ghost Box, for instance, and sort of try to listen to what it's saying and pick out little things here and there. I want to be able to capture EVPs that have been recorded by myself or Austin that are of voices that were not there when Austin and I were alone in these buildings. So we're really kind of back to the basics paranormal investigating, meaning it's raw, it's gritty. We're literally two guys that have cameras and we're going into these haunted locations and we're trying to find this stuff. So we don't get too tied up in any of the, I'll call it newer technology, and nothing against it, because I've heard some really cool things come out of the Ghost Box or out of the Ovilus, but that was not what we wanted to focus on. We wanted to focus on filming and seeing if we could capture this on EVP.
I gotcha.
Now, do you guys ever try the old techniques of investigating with, like, the bells on the door and stuff like that? Have you ever taken some of, like, the Warrens and their techniques from back before all this technology came out?
You know, I personally haven't. I don't know if Austin has, but I personally haven't. The only thing that I've done as far as, like, we'll call it old school investigating, I would say, is I've used dowsing rods. And I've played around with dowsing rods before, and I've had some, you know, some strange things happen using them. Not that I'm necessarily sold on dowsing rods, but I think that's really, you know, when it comes from how we're looking at things, like I said, if I can't see it with my eyes, if I can't capture it on video, if I can't hear it with my ears, meaning capture it through my digital voice recorder, it's not something that I can put into the documentary. It's not something that I can put my stamp on and say, this is verifiable proof of the paranormal. You know, and like I said, nothing against the Ghost Box, the Shack Hacker, or, you know, any of those things. Because, again, they've all presented some evidence to us that it's really hard to deny. but we really truly just wanted to get back to, you know, a couple of guys with their cameras going into these haunted places and, you know, seeing what we could find.
How many places did you guys investigate?
We investigated a total of 13 places, 13 official investigations. We stopped at a lot of other places, and you know, the thing that's hard about this, and maybe Austin can speak to this a little bit too, but you know, when we're out and we show up in this small town, I'm going to use Iowa for instance. We show up in Iowa at this small town. There's, you know, 500 or 600 people that live there, and we show up and we start talking to the locals and we say, hey, this is what we're doing. We're filming a documentary film. We're looking for the most haunted places in the Midwest that we can possibly find. Is there anything? Can you point us in the right direction? And in many cases, people are willing to do that. You know, we might talk to some kids on the corner and they'll say, you know, that church over there is haunted, or, you know, my parents' house is haunted, or whatever that is. So we do get leads from time to time. But, you know, there's a lot of people, too, that can be intimidated by the fact that you've got a couple guys looking to record and interview them and kind of come into their, whatever it is, a house or a, you know, a building. And some people are very cautious about that because I think they're nervous about provoking whatever's there. They're nervous about the activity level rising because we've sort of stirred it up. So we investigated, like I said, 13 actual locations. We did true, you know, 8 to 12 hour long investigations at some of these places. With that said, there were a lot of places that, again, we stopped at. We did some filming, but we didn't get the opportunity to actually go in and do a you know, a full night's investigation like we had hoped.
Now, if you could pick any place, like either around the world or in the United States, that you would want to investigate maybe for the second movie or anything like that, what would it be and why?
Ooh, Austin, what do you think? Is there anywhere that you can think of that while Austin thinks of his, I can tell you this much. I have been fascinated, interested in the Amityville Horror Story for a very long time, as long as I could possibly remember. I remember the first time I read the book, the first time I saw the movie. I was a pretty young kid the first time that I saw the movie, and I've been fascinated by the Amityville story my entire life. And I had the opportunity in January of this year to actually get into the Amityville house. And for, you know, anybody who knows the story, it's a privately owned home. There's no tours. There's, you know, no camera crews that are allowed in. Now, I was not there filming. I was not there doing any paranormal investigating. Through a friend of a friend kind of thing, I was actually able to get in. And I spent about 3 hours there. And for somebody who is so interested, so passionate, about the Amityville story, that I've literally spent thousands of hours of my life researching this. I mean, like I said, I talked to Hans Holzer right before he died. It was the last interview he gave, you know, about the Amityville story. To actually have the opportunity to get into the house was unbelievable. I mean, it was literally, without a doubt, one of the coolest moments of my life. And it was, I can't even explain to you the feeling that I had going in there, because it was just like, I've wanted this for so long, and here I am walking through the front door, something that the owners, you know, or the old owner didn't ever allow that to happen. So to have that opportunity and to be allowed to roam and explore the house for 3 hours, it was remarkable.
Yeah. And I guess for me, the Amityville Horror House would obviously be ridiculous, but sort of a cliche one for me is the Winchester Mystery House in San Jose. I think just as like a place, even walking in there without doing an investigation at all, I'd be ecstatic just to walk through that place. So that's kind of my dream investigation. I'd love to go out there someday.
Now, going back to your documentary, is there any particular place that kind of took you by surprise as like, you didn't expect it to be as active as it was.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there was. I mentioned earlier we stopped filming in August of 2016, and there was one location that we wanted to get to, more specifically one location that I wanted to get to, that it just didn't work out, and that was Edinburgh Manor, which is in Iowa. And in 2016, Austin and I had the opportunity. We drove right past it. And, you know, as you guys know as paranormal researchers, for some of these more famous haunted locations, especially the ones that have made it onto any of the TV shows, they get booked out. I mean, it's not like every location that we investigated, we walked up and we said, hey, can we do this? And they let us right through. Mm-hmm. Some of these places we knew, in Edinburgh is a perfect example. We knew we were going to have to, wait our turn, so to speak, to get in there. We were going to have to give it time because it isn't one of those places that you just walk in and go and do your thing. So to make a long story short, in about January, it was actually, I think, right after I got back from Amityville, that sort of sparked my interest again in this whole thing and really started driving me hard towards the end goal of seeing this film get done. And I told Austin, I'm like, you know what? I want to get to Edinburgh. I need to get to Edinburgh. I feel like I'm in some way missing out on something. And I said, would you go out for one last trip? And I think he had to think about it a little bit, but I think he was cautiously optimistic in a way that, you know, and again, I shouldn't even talk for him because he's on the phone with us, but I think he was cautiously optimistic because he knew that there was something about Edinburgh that him and I both felt when we were down there was different from a lot of locations. And it seemed to be sort of a much darker location than we had really gotten a chance to investigate prior to that. So after, you know, him and I went back and forth for a little bit, we finally said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to go down. We're going to do one final trip. We're going to pack up our stuff. We're going to go to Edinburgh. And fast forward to, you know, May of this last year, or this year, you know, a few months ago, we hit the road one last trip. And I think, you know, as Austin said it perfectly in the trailer that's on YouTube, you know, he said, I think you've bit off more than we can chew. And I think that's a perfect way to describe it because it was literally a terrifying experience for us. It was, you know, again, this giant, huge old building that has a lot of dark history and a lot of bad things that happened there. And Austin and I are walking around, and the stuff that was happening was absolutely intense. It was crazy. We had not been exposed to what happened to us at Edinburgh. So, in my opinion, and Austin, go ahead and chime in here, but that was, for me, that was really the location that was like, okay, this is intense. In a way, this is what we're looking for, but as Austin said, I think we bit off more than we could chew.
Right, yeah, exactly. From my perspective, going into this project, Blaine had done some paranormal investigation prior to the project, but for me, this was fairly new. And so, like he said, we went to 13 different locations, and that was location number 13. So prior to that, I had been to 12. I had done 12 different investigations. I had kind of, you know, obviously learned, like, really, really, really that ghosts are real. And so by that time, I felt more like a veteran going into that. And then once it was nighttime, that feeling of comfort was completely gone. It was like humbling as a paranormal investigator.
Now, do you think that two parts of this question? Do you think the number 13 has anything to do with the fact that could have added to the fact that there was, like, more stuff going on? And the second part of the question is, when you guys left Edinburgh Castle, did you feel, how long did it take for you to recover after that experience?
For me personally, I don't think the number 13 had anything to do with it. You know, I try not to be so superstitious, but I find myself at times being superstitious. So I don't want to say that, you know, that was our 13th investigation, and we were somehow, you know, not cursed, but we were somehow, you know, what happened to us was because that was our 13th investigation. I really don't think that. I could be completely wrong, but I don't have that feeling. As far as for the second question, you know, we came back from Edinburgh Manor, and it was one of those things where, you know, it was a long drive. It was like 6 hours for Austin and I to get down there. And there wasn't much said on the way home because I think we were very, very, very much affected by what happened there. And, you know, I was just telling somebody this the other day that for the first few nights that we were home, I legitimately dreaded the sun going down because I was, I don't want to say scared, but it was kind of like, I don't want the sun to go down because the effect of that place, sort of the negative energy that was there and sort of the oppression that we felt there, in my opinion, came home with us. And I still feel like I'm very much feeling the effects of what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. To add on that, one of the things that Blaine and I do at the end of every investigation is make sure to tell the spirits there that we are, you know, they are not welcome to follow us or attach themselves to any belongings that we have. And up until that point, I had never felt as though the spirits at any of these locations really were going to attach themselves to my brother, I, or any of the stuff we had with us. But at that location, I remember very vividly that it was like I needed, I was so terrified that
mm-hmm.
they were going to come home with us. This was totally different in that sense.
And I think to add on to what Austin just said, when we go out and we do a, you know, investigation, especially for, you know, the documentary film, we would go out and we'd try to spend at least 3 days at that location. And that was an opportunity for us to kind of get the lay of the land, to get into the location, to shoot, you know, B-roll, we call it B-roll, which is just kind of the artsy shots, you know, the really cool shots, the slow motion shots, the slider shots, things like
mm-hmm.
that, to film some of that. And then to interview anybody that we can who's involved with that place. Well, on the first night that Austin and I were, you know, doing the Edinburgh investigation, or that we were there, we were staying in our hotel that night, and we had been filming all day, and we came back and, you know, we ate and then we went to bed, and I had what I thought was a dream that I opened my eyes, and I can still see it to this day. I could have swore there was an old woman at the foot of my bed, and it wasn't like she was tall. She wasn't, you know, 5 or 6 feet tall. She was really low to the ground right next to my bed, about 2.5 feet off the ground. So almost I could only really see her face and her shoulders. Now,
mm-hmm.
I opened my eyes, and in the blink of an instant, or, you know, in an instant, she was gone. And I kind of just thought, well, I dreamt that. You know, I mean, we've been at Edinburgh Manor. It's this this old building where, you know, a lot of people died, and a lot of them were older
yeah.
people. So I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking about this. Well, I woke up the next morning, and I told Austin this, and it gives me chills right now just talking about it. But I said to Austin, I kind of told him what happened. He's like, you got to be kidding me, because he said he woke up in the middle of the night and thought he saw a figure next to my bed, and kind of the same thing, that it sort of just was gone, and he said it creeped him out, and he had to roll over onto the other side so he wasn't facing,
yeah.
you know, my bed. So kind of right from the get-go, we almost had some things that were going on that we hadn't really experienced anywhere else as far as attachment and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is amazing. Yeah. I've had that's the fact that you both experienced it, just gives more credence, you know, to what happened. Now, to lighten the mood a little bit, do you have any like funny stories you could tell from the road? Anything that stands out?
Oh man, we had such a good time. There are so many. I think the fun part about this was doing it with Austin. I mean, he's my brother, you know, and mm-hmm. and so we automatically we have that connection. And you know, there's so many little like inside jokes. You know, like I remember leaving a location in Wisconsin, and we were actually on our way back to Minneapolis. It was one of the times that we said, okay, we're gonna go back and kind of take a time out and take, you know, 3 days off, because we need to shake everything that's going on and, you know, get some more film equipment and you know, things like that. And it was I don't know, probably a 7-hour drive back from where we were coming from. And we were watching like the stupidest. Austin had his phone out, and he had YouTube videos on of just these funny videos, and he was playing them. And I don't know if it was like that we were delirious from being up all night, that we had, you know, a sugar high because we've been drinking Mountain Dew all night trying to stay awake. But we were literally just like crying. We were laughing so hard at these stupid videos that at any other point in time I wouldn't think was probably very funny. You know, it was just sort of like, okay, ha, ha, ha. But in that moment, you know, doing what we just did, having really this, you know, spending the last 12 hours walking around in the dark, looking at an LCD screen, you know, and now it's me mm-hmm. driving home and to be watching some of these videos. I mean, it was just things like that. Like I can't think of anything. I don't know if you can, Austin, off the top of my head, but that was
right.
just one experience
yeah.
that I remember just like, I mean, tears running down my face. We were just having such a good time and laughing so hard.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with you there. I think that drive home was really like memorable. I think there's something to be said about, yeah, being brothers, and, you know, a lot of people have brothers, but have you like experienced being terrified with unnatural things happening right in front of you with your brother after going through such terrifying and, you know, incredible events? It's kind of to then realize like, hey, this is still your brother here. It adds a whole new dimension to it. And it was totally great. Wouldn't have wanted to, I mean, it sounds cheesy. I wouldn't want to do it with anybody else, but I wouldn't feel like it would be the same experience with somebody else.
Yeah, and I would agree with that
100%.
It was awesome.
Going through a paranormal investigation or being scared, even with a complete group of strangers, can bring people together. I can't imagine what it's like going out with your brother, your blood. You know, that is really
right.
cool.
When are you planning on releasing?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, like I said, Austin and I grew up in a haunted house, so we had both had paranormal experiences, but there's specifically one moment in the film that I don't want to give away, but where you could just see it on Austin's face that it was like the light bulb came on and he realized
yep.
this stuff is real. And again, growing up in a haunted house, there were things that happened, you know, to us and, you know, sure. Yeah. There's some of it you can kind of say, well, that was, you know, the wind or, you know, the house is creaking or
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, those kind of things. But
yeah,
for some of the things that happened to us, and it's such an amazing moment in the film. I mean, Austin is his eyes are as big as saucers, and it's just like, you can see it. Something happened and we know this stuff is real.
Absolutely.
The light bulb went off, huh?
For sure.
So when can we look for this movie to be coming out?
Yeah, it'll be out this fall. So we've got some cool announcements that we're going to be making here in the next week. It's going to be out this fall. I don't have an exact date on it because we were actually going to have it out. It was going to be out in August. And when we ended up going back and, you know, going back out on the road to the one last trip, we needed to cut some out of the film because we can't have a 3-hour long documentary. So we had to take a huge portion out, which, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier with the second episode or the second documentary would be really cool. It'd be really fun. So we had to take a huge chunk out so we could fit in what happened to us in May. So that sort of delayed the process a little bit more. And I've told people this and Austin, I probably drive him insane with this, but I'm a perfectionist. You know, I want this thing to be perfect, and I don't know that I'm ever going to get perfection, but I want to get as damn close as I can to it. And I think we're getting there. So I don't want to, you know, say, well, it's going to be out October 15th when on October 14th, I'm not happy with the product. I want it to be, it to be as close to perfect as possible. And, you know, if that means people have to wait a little bit longer to see it, that's just the way it is. But I promise the end result is going to be something that, you know, you will love, and I'll make sure I get you a copy of it because I'd love to hear your feedback.
Oh, I would love to see it. I cannot wait to watch it.
Awesome. Thank you.
No problem. What do you want people to know, you know, personally about this film?
I think, you know, really a lot of it we've sort of mentioned it, is that this is truly a, you know, this raw, gritty style documentary. You know, there's nothing flashy about this. I mean, we didn't have some $50,000 budget that we were working with. This was all self-funded, and we're amateur documentary filmmakers, and some of what we did is held together with, you know, bubble gum and toothpicks, but the shot that we got was well worth the bubble gum and toothpicks. So I think the big thing for people to know is that, you know, if you're looking for something with a lot of flash, something that, is going to show some really crazy, you know, effects and recreations, that's not this documentary. But if you're looking for something that is a really good story, you're looking for something that is about two brothers just traveling the back roads of America, looking for haunted locations, with just literally grabbing our two cameras or our cameras and going out and doing it, this is going to be something that you love. And the evidence that we captured is really remarkable. And for anybody who's a skeptic, I promise you, if you watch this, you're going to think twice before considering yourself a skeptic again.
Wow. One more question that I'll let you guys go. There are probably some amateur or would-be amateur filmmakers listening to the show now and listen to your story. What advice would you give them if they want to start and do a documentary like you guys are doing?
I'll let Austin answer first, and I'll go after him.
Yeah, I guess like the thing that you kind of learn right away is that you can't fake it. It's cliche to say be yourself, but you really do. You have to be yourself. You can't pretend to be some sort of crazy professional, and people aren't going to relate to that either. So you need to be, you know, you need to really be yourself. And the only thing that's going to make your experience different than anybody else's is if you are yourself. So going out there and filming something like this, you want to make sure to keep it sincere, I guess. That would be my biggest point of advice.
Yeah, and that's you know, perfectly said. I think he's totally right on that. You know, a documentary film is not something that is, you know, we're not making a true movie, quote unquote. I mean, there's no acting in this. We didn't have a script. Like I said, we didn't even know where we were going half the time. We were just driving, you know? So he's totally right. You know, if somebody wants to get into this, number one, be yourself. And as cliche as this sounds, you know, if you want to be a documentary filmmaker, be a documentary filmmaker. You've got to follow your dream. You've got to make this happen. And that's where I was at, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I had this idea for this film, and it was like, you know, I was pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off. And finally we went out and we did it. So if you know, whether you want to be a basketball player, go be a basketball player. If you want to be an astronaut, go be an astronaut. If you want to be a documentary filmmaker, grab your camera, go out there, start filming.
Well, guys, the film is called The Paranormal Diaries. It features Blaine and Austin Duncan. If you guys want to talk about anything, how to get in touch with you, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, now's your chance to plug yourself.
Yeah, definitely. You can get a hold of both Austin and I if you just, you know, look us up on Facebook. You know, look up Blaine Duncan, Paranormal Diaries. My name will pop up. Same thing with Austin's, you know, Austin Duncan Paranormal Diaries. You can find us on there. Otherwise, if anybody wants to email me, and I always welcome people to email me. I get a lot of emails of people sending me their stories and pictures and things like that. Feel free to send me an email. It's paranormaldiariesfilm@gmail.com. That's paranormaldiariesfilm@gmail.com. And then hopefully we actually are just getting ready to launch our website, which is going to be out in the next few weeks. So kind of take a look at our Facebook page. You can do a search on Facebook for the Paranormal Diaries documentary film. We'll be announcing some cool things on there pretty soon.
Right, and don't forget to check out our YouTube, Blaine Duncan. We got two trailers. We just released one 2 weeks ago. So
yeah, whatever you start bringing new stuff out, let me know, and I'll share it on all my pages as well. So I'll be sure to get the word
awesome.
Out there. So
thank you.
You know, try to get as many views for you guys as I possibly can. Definitely appreciate you guys coming on the show and talking. Sorry, Celeste had to sign off. She had bad service down in Florida. So she says thanks for coming on, and good luck on the show. And just be sure to email me when you have an exact date about when this could be released so I can tell everyone about it and start pumping it up for you guys.
That'd be awesome.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was good to talk to you, and we'll be in touch soon.
Sounds good, brother. You guys take care.
You too.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was awesome. It was a lot of fun talking to Blaine and Austin about their experience making the film, and it's really cool talking to two brothers. The fact that they came together and made this film to document the paranormal is really, really neat. Like I said before, the documentary looks good, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if they enter it in some film festivals, because it looks really great. I mean, I know paranormal documentaries are a dime a dozen, especially on YouTube. With different teams documenting their evidence and stuff like that, but this is different. This is very, very well made. You can tell they took a lot of time to create this this documentary. So again, I want to thank my guests for coming on the show. Next week we're going to do a host show. I think it's going to be myself, Celeste, if she can make it, and Angie. Just shooting the shit, talking about anything and everything paranormal. We haven't had one of those shows in a while, so I think that'll be fun just to relax and, you know, get to know the host a little bit. Of course, you know, I've been doing this for 3 years now, so, you know, there's not much more to know about me, but Angie's new to the show. Fairly new to the show, and you know, Celeste is fairly new. You know, she started last year, but she barely talks. So hopefully, you get to know us a little bit better next week. So again, thank you to Blaine and Austin for coming on the show and talking about the documentary. Next week we have the host show. That's about it. So. That's it. I got nothing else. So I will talk to you guys next week. Same freaking awesome time. Same freaking awesome channel. And we'll see you later.